Support for Interlochen Public Radio is provided by you and by Comfort Keepers. For over 20 years, Comfort Keepers have been providing in-home care services and keeping seniors living independently in the comfort of their own home. Learn more at comfortkeepers.com.
It's the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco. Coming up, taking screens out of the classroom. It can be done. They're doing it in Meesic. But should it be done? We talk with a reporter from the Cadillac News who has probed those questions. That's just ahead. Right now, how to pay for housing in the tip of the mid. Most of the time, when you hear about real estate investment, you hear about big banks or private equity firms, which are becoming some of America's biggest landlords. One group in Emmett and Charlevoix counties is trying to reverse that trend. It's starting a community investment fund with a focus on housing that would let community members in the tip of the mid area invest in housing right there in their hometowns. IPR's Claire Keenan-Kurgan is here to tell us more. Hi, Claire.
Good morning, Ed.
What is this new investment fund that's starting up in the tip of the mid? How did this idea get started?
So the fund is called Invest Mit. It's a pun on tip of the mid and investment, as you might have realized yourself. It grew out of conversations about how to finance affordable housing. There's a volunteer board that's been running the fund and developing the idea for the past 6 years. And Derek Shields is the board chair. His day job is working for the Little Traverse Land Conservancy, but he's been running the investment board for a few years now.
Investment started with a desire to do something about the housing crisis. That's what brought us all together initially. And we started talking about asking, how do we actually finance more attainable housing? And that led us to the concept of community capital, where money is raised from within the community and then gets invested back into local projects.
Community capital. Okay, so he gave us a little definition there. Tell us more.
It is kind of, so a community capital fund is kind of like donating to a local charity or a local foundation, except with one huge difference, which is that you get money back based on the fund's performance. So instead of just giving money to help build new housing or to support new local businesses, you're actually invested in those businesses like you would be in the stock market, but it's just in your home community. And there are examples of funds like this across the country, mostly in bigger cities. Shields described it as moving money from Wall Street to Main Street, meaning what if some of that money that people invested into mutual funds or, the S&P 500 or whatever, went directly into their own town.
So who is this designed for? Like, who can be an investor in this?
Shield said their goal is for the fund to be for a large swath of the community, not just for wealthier people who fit the mold of a traditional investor. The minimum investment is $500.
It's for those of us who don't think of ourselves as investors as well. We've structured the fund so that anyone can be an investor, truly, truly focusing on the community and this idea of community capital, which keeps wealth circulating local.
And it's a 7-year term of investment with either a 4 or 2% return rate, which is pretty modest and still has some level of risk, like any investment. But it's for those looking to put some money in Emmett and Charlevoix counties directly.
Okay, so how's it going, I guess, so far, right? Like, that's the big question is, what are the organizers starting to think about for their first projects? How's it doing?
Yeah, so it just started up this winter. They just launched. And Shield said so far they have 9 investors who have put in a total of $300,000 so far. They're hoping for an initial fund amount of $3 million. And their focus, as I mentioned earlier, is on real estate investment. That relatively low return rate means that there's a desire to keep the housing more affordable than, you know, if some outside real estate investment firm were to be doing it. It's still pretty early, but they're eyeing one locally owned apartment complex with 24 units that may go on the market soon. And this could keep it in relatively
Local hands,
yes,
local control.
Yes, keep it in local hands, keep it relatively affordable. And they're also keeping the door open to expand beyond housing in the future. And it could be investment in anything in the local community.
Claire, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ed.
IPR's Claire Keenan-Kurgan. The rise of artificial intelligence is the latest way technology has become front and center in almost every industry. But one Northern Michigan school is pushing all of that, or at least most of it, off to the side. Last month, Meesick Elementary School rolled out its No Screens Literacy Initiative, taking Chromebooks and iPads out of the hands of students and replacing them with, you know, paper books. Daniel Shaner wrote about this for the Cadillac News, and he joins us now. Hey, Daniel.
Hello.
Okay, this did not just come out of the blue. Why did Meesick decide to take this step?
Well, it's kind of two things, right? They've seen their declining literacy scores, you know, on the last year's MSTEP. Over half of elementary students, you know, were partially proficient or not proficient in English language arts, right? They wanted to address that decline. At the same time, they have been looking at a growing body of research that shows an association with more screen use and lower test scores.
So MSTEP is the standardized test that students, public school students in Michigan, take to assess their progress in various subjects. What do the teachers say about this? Have they noticed any results, either, you know, empirical ones like test scores or just changes, feelings in the classroom?
So it's a little too early to tell, right? Teachers, what they're seeing is students are going along with it. They're not seeing many behavioral issues. And kind of what this looks like in the classroom is more reading time, more physical games and activities, and more pencil and paper.
I remember reading time when I was in elementary school, which was, you know, in the 80s and 90s. And I just, like, I remember the smell of the books and the silence in the classroom. I really liked it. Do the students now like what they're getting? I mean, are they adjusting to this? What do they think of the technology going away for a while and paper books and stuff coming back in?
Yeah. So speaking to school officials, including, you know, Superintendent Jack Ledford, right? He says that kids aren't the happiest about this. And it makes sense, right? You know, screens are in every facet of our lives, and even more so theirs, right? But students that I spoke to said that while the change was shocking, they understand. I talked to one student, Connor McGinnis, who, you know, said that after, you know, looking things up on his phone, talking with his teacher, he understands that, you know, people are concerned and that he's going to learn better when he's using those physical books.
And he's a fourth grader. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. There are people who would argue, too, that screens are an important part of the educational experience. The world is a digital world now. It's important to prepare for that. What are they saying about this step?
They're saying that it's bold. There's a growing body of research that shows an association between, you know, an increase in screen time and then a decrease in literacy rates, an increase in mental health and behavioral problems, and stronger neural connections are made when kids are physically doing, you know, these activities, right? Instead of typing on a keyboard, they're writing things down.
Wow. It's fascinating stuff. Daniel, thank you very much.
Of course.
Daniel Shaner wrote about Meesick Elementary moving screens out of the classroom and paper books back in as a way to improve literacy scores. His reporting comes to us through the Northern Michigan Journalism Collaborative, which is a project led by Interlochen Public Radio and Bridge Michigan and funded by Press Forward Northern Michigan. And that's the Up North Lowdown for Tuesday, March 24th.